In episode 68 of MobiCast, John and Chris kick off part one of our microservices bootcamp, answering the essential questions of what, why, and how. Welcome to MobiCast, a weekly conversation about cloud-native development, AWS, and building distributed systems. Let's jump right in.
Welcome, Chris. It's another episode of MobiCast.
Hey, John. Good to be back.
Yeah, good to have you back. You know, it's been a few weeks, not for our listeners, because we try to keep one coming out every week.
Don't tell the secrets.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, but we haven't done this in a few weeks. I've been on vacation for the last few weeks. So it's kind of fun to be back and have something new to talk about. This week, we're going to talk about microservices, and we're doing this little series, Microservice Bootcamp. And this is part one. It's designing and sizing your microservices. Before we get into it, what have you been up to lately, Chris?
Boy, that's a good question. You know, mostly just it's summertime now. So kind of like doing that transition every year of going from folks in school, kids in school, my wife's a school teacher, and transitioning to the like, hey, it's summer vacation. So part of me is a little sad everyone's out on vacation except for me. But that's okay. My vacation's coming later in the summer. And then also it's kind of been interesting. My son's got a full-time job. So it's like, actually he's working too. It's like he had no break.
Wow.
Graduated high school and immediately went to a full-time job, and he's got to be up early out of the house every morning by like 7:15.
Wow.
And you know, he's not getting home until after 5 and dealing with traffic and all that kind of good stuff. So it's pretty interesting to hear him kind of like come home and be like, oh, I'm so tired.
Right, right.
I'm like, welcome to my world.
And that's such a brutal transition. I just remember being young and suddenly kind of coming to the realization that I was only going to have 2, maybe 3 weeks off a year. Like, what? So hard.
It's like, why was I so excited to get here so quickly?
And I also was on vacation. We went to the East Coast and I visited some old friends from college. I didn't go to our 20-year reunion, but that's what it would have been for me. And then went to this pretty incredible little event called Aspen Ideas Festival, which is a bit hoity-toity, but super, super interesting. Has a lot of really cool speakers and a lot of really cool people there. And so I'll try to capture some of the energy that gave me and take it forward for the next few months.
Awesome. Yeah. Kind of jealous. Sounded like it was quite the soiree, rubbing elbows with with all the folks in the communities there and in a really beautiful part of the world as well.
So,
right?
So beautiful there. Yeah. And I mean, I live in a really beautiful part, Eagle, here, but I was like, oh, I got to get over to Aspen. We've got to move here.
We talked about this the other day. It's like the Dumb and Dumber movie. Where it's like, we got to go to Aspen.
So let's start here. We're just going to go through what is a microservice. We're going to talk about their business value. We're going to talk about what functionality we should put into a microservice. And then we're going to try to determine the size of, how to size them. So can't do any of that without just giving a brief overview. And we've talked about microservices before, but, you know, let's give our Kelsis definition, our MobiCast definition of what a microservice is.
Yeah. And maybe just to kind of like preface this, just a little bit of like why kind of talk about like this. It's kind of looking back and it's like we talk about microservices all the time. And I mean, everyone does, right? It's a buzzword. It's really common. Everyone's heard of them. Everyone's kind of using them. But we never really kind of like have specifically addressed it. And we have received comments from listeners saying like, you know, hey, it'd be really helpful to have a more nuanced discussion around like, what are the practicalities of microservices, right? It's really easy to talk about it in theory, but like I need help, tips, you know, guidelines for how to actually make this work in the real world. And it gets a little hairy, right? I mean, it's not straightforward. So I'm kind of hoping that's what this kind of multi-episode series becomes, is kind of like just that, like we'll talk, you know, there'll be a little bit of definition and theory, but for the most part, really focus on just the practical how-tos, kind of the gotchas, like what's worked, what hasn't worked. And hopefully that ends up becoming really helpful for folks.
Great. Yes.
Yeah. So with that, you know, let's first of all talk about like what is, let's have the definition of a microservice, because, you know, that's going to help set the framework here for like how we then go on and design these things, like, right. Like what do they do? What's their response, their sphere of responsibility, if you will, and whatnot. So you know, in general, like microservices, it involves, it's the process of factoring your business capabilities or logic into well-defined domains and subdomains, right? Which is kind of like, it's a mouthful, but in general, it just means like it's divide and conquer, right? You're looking at your business, at the problem space that you're dealing with, and you're just identifying like the chunks, like what are like the natural size chunks? What are those domains? And then, you know, for the bigger domains, breaking them down into subdomains. And so you're doing that modularization, right? Like looking at your system, at your problem space, at your business logic, and identifying like what are like the key pieces, what are the components, right? And so that becomes kind of like that first process, that part of the process. And then
I was going to say that process is, hopefully you're doing that process if you're writing a monolith too. That, you know, that's useful inside monoliths. So microservice must mean a bit more than that.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And so those basically, you know, those domains, those subdomains, those become candidates for those microservices. And as you said, like as if you have a monolith, hopefully you're doing this too, because if you don't, then it's just going to become a big ball of mud, right? It's going
right.
to be, if there's no organization there to that monolith, if there's no modularization to it, like it's quickly going to get out of hand. And so if you do have a successful monolith, then you have been doing this.
Sure. Yeah.
Out of necessity, right? So microservices, first and foremost, they've been factored down into some reasonable size chunk of doing something. They're very focused, and you know, basically they're doing that one thing of that particular domain or subdomain, and kind of think of them at the module level of packaging. They stand alone on their own. And then another thing that I think is pretty useful here for a definition is to say that they have their own data model, which is completely decoupled from the rest of the system.
Right? Yeah, that's what I was waiting for. That is the key thing. Yeah. For at least in my mind, because that really separates it. And I think a lot of incorrectly put together microservices don't do that right. They're still pretty coupled from the point of view of the data model.
Yeah, I mean, you can definitely have microservices that don't have any state, in which case they don't have a database. But for those with state that do have databases, I think, you know, it is pretty important that in order to take advantage of all the benefits that microservices give us, that there is one and only one owner of that state, so that it is fully encapsulated, right? Like if you have multiple services all hitting the same database table, that's a huge coupling between them.
Right.
And you're going to run and you just don't have microservices anymore at that point, right? You've done some work to have the modularization at the logic level, but the state is completely coupled. So I think for us, definitely through this series of talks, we'll definitely stick to that microservices with state, they own it, and only they are able to directly access that. And so anything else that does need access to that state, they're going to get access to that via the owning microservice, mm-hmm. right? So the owning microservice is going to provide APIs. And so everything here is driven by APIs, right? And making those API calls. And you have the whatever consumers want to get access to that, they can make those API calls to that microservice. And it is responsible for touching that database only.
Right on. Yeah. And I mean, just concretely, if you have, say, a user microservice and maybe a whole separate other microservice for user profiles, the user profile database cannot be changed by the user microservice. You have to call the user profile microservice to change that profile. I just wanted to kind of make it concrete.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So I think, you know, in general, I mean, that's kind of the description that we can use for like, what is a microservice? So again, something small, of reasonable size, it's modular, it's kind of independent. If it has state, it's the only one that is directly managing that state. Okay, that's great. That's a microservice. But so why? Like, why are microservices so popular? Why is it such a buzzword? Why are people adopting them? And so there's a lot of benefits to microservices. And a lot of this comes down to it's the same benefits that you get at the code level. So, you know, as we're writing code, like, we know that it's probably not a good idea to have like a single file with 1,000 lines of code in it with three functions, right? That are all 300 lines each or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like that's not a good design, right? It's very hard to maintain. It's hard to understand. It's very complicated. And so we know that, like, by breaking that up into smaller pieces, that's going to be a lot easier to deal with in every regard. And this is really kind of like what microservices boil down to. Like the benefits of it is just it's that divide and conquer. It's breaking things down into smaller sizes that are independent, reducing the coupling between them so that it becomes, you get a lot of these specific benefits, right? So, you know, there's many benefits. Some of the ones that we can, you know, specifically talk about would be like development flexibility, right? So it becomes much easier for you to onboard new developers to your code base if it's a smaller code base, right? So if you have, you know, a big monolith system that even if it is kind of organized in its structure to kind of break it out into modules, you still have to see all that stuff, right? And kind of wade through it versus if you have a microservice just for the user profile store, that's all you have to look at, right? And that's all you have to come up to speed on. So
Right. Yeah. It's like the new developer doesn't need to know if the new developer is going to work on the geolocation service. They don't need to know anything about the payment service at all. Like right. they can't break the payment service by updating the wrong code or forgetting to put a certain configuration in. Like you might be able to. I've definitely even seen it happen in a more monolithic architecture.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. And so, you know, not only is it easier to onboard new developers, it's also easier to scale teams, right? Like this makes it much easier just from a staffing standpoint, where you can, each one of these microservices can have their own team. Some of them, it may be a team of one. Bigger ones may be multiple people. But as you do that decomposition, right, you're now basically making it much easier to fill out your engineering team and how to staff that and to grow it and to not have the problems that come with getting bigger and bigger and the interdependencies, right? Because again, these are for the most part very loosely coupled, really only through interfaces. So you can scale people faster and easier. You can onboard new people. They can become more effective quicker with these. There's also the benefits with deployment, right? So like you now have quicker and faster deploys because the unit of work that you're the unit of code that you're deploying is smaller. Again, it's not coupled to other things. You don't have to wait for maybe someone else to check in code from, you know, another brand. I mean, those kinds of issues just become much less of an issue, right? Because you're dealing with a smaller piece of code. So you have quicker, faster. It's possible to have quicker, faster deploys. You're also reducing the risk of those deploys because the amount of code that's changing is less than if it is like potentially with a big monolith. So, I mean, I remember, you know, in the past, like doing an actual build and deploy was like, that was an event, right?
Right. Yeah.
It's like a once a month type thing. Mm-hmm. If you're good, right? Like for some people, for some teams, it's like once a quarter.
Yep.
Right. And it's a big thing. It's like all hands on deck. It's like, you know, there's going to be some downtime, you know, things are going to go wrong. Like it's just a big, big deal. And, you know, with microservices, like that's much less like if that is the case with microservices, then you're doing it wrong. Something's gone really, really wrong, or you're just calling a monolith a microservice, maybe.
Right. Sure.
So there's that. And then scalability is another really great benefit of microservices because you now have much more refined control over exactly what parts of your system that need to be scaled. Right. So it's like, could be, let's see, maybe there's one particular, two or three particular API calls that are the most popular parts of your system. And maybe it's like user profile, right? Like fetching the user profile is something that's just called quite a bit. Maybe it has like the most performance overhead, or it's just, that's the most frequent call. Well, if you lift that out and make that its own microservice, now you can just scale up the machines that are responsible for providing that piece of functionality versus maybe the other 90% of the code base is just fine on less hardware, right? Or a smaller system. And so instead of having to scale everything up, right, for the least common denominator, you can now be much more strategic in how you scale. And it also makes scaling a lot easier just from an engineering standpoint as well. So again, going smaller makes things just a lot easier across the board. And so those are some of the benefits of microservices. Anything else comes top of mind, John, that you can think of?
No, I don't think so. But I always have a tendency to think about things from the beginning of a project or the beginning of a company and what sort of happens then versus what happens later. And I think that you're about to get into some of those trade-offs, because in the beginning of a company, you know, kind of some of this stuff actually works against you. That scalability, for example, like when your scale is small, having to have a different database for every single microservice is actually more machines than you probably need, right? Like you maybe could run the whole thing on, you know, less than one machine, and suddenly you've got to have, you know, multiple databases just in order to even run the system. Mm-hmm. And then another one is just like the other trade-offs that you're about to get into around some complexity that you add to the system by having things decoupled and knowing how to communicate across interfaces that are not just code interfaces, but rather like protocol interfaces like HTTP. That's a little trickier, you know? So it could be more work if you create a lot of microservices at the beginning of a project, and there's more kind of non-business oriented heavy lifting that teams might have to do at the beginning of a project that's really like spread into many microservices that later might pay dividends, but in the beginning it might feel like you're doing a lot of work that you could have done so quickly with a monolith.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and so it feels like this is definitely a good point. Like, let's talk about like some of the trade-offs. Like, it's not all roses with microservices. Like, it does cause some. I mean, there's some trade-offs. So first and foremost, I mean, like, and probably leading the way with those trade-offs is just the fact that microservices result in more moving parts. Right. So your system, you're building a much more distributed system with microservices. So instead of having, you know, one or two elements, maybe you now have five or six elements. Right. And so at the system level, definitely more complicated. And as you point out, like, as you're starting out, it's like, why do I need these six things? Mm-hmm. Really only two like would be faster, and it's more than enough. Right. And I, you know, these get into some of the practical considerations as well. And you have to kind of just look at every situation for what it is and know what the benefits are, what the trade-offs are, and make those decisions on what's best for you in your system. If you're making a prototype application, like probably no reason to go full-blown microservices. If you know like this will never get bigger than a certain size, or if it's going to be something that's going to be retired in the relatively near future, then that has to factor into it. But if, you know, you do have hopes of growing, you do expect this to be kind of a long-term service. If you do expect to have a growth in user base and just folks that
and are especially using in team that, size
in absolutely in team size, right? Yeah. So like, all of those things. So if growth is in your future, if longevity is in your future with it, then yeah, you're gonna put some investment, pay down some investment at the beginning, and you know it's gonna require some process culture changes, right? To deal with, like, for folks that are not used to doing these things this way, you're gonna get pushback, right, from developers and maybe DevOps folks and whatnot, right? Like, to, because it's kind of a crazy idea. It's like, what, we're gonna have multiple instead of having one database, we're gonna have like four? Mm-hmm. It's kind of weird and seems like a lot of extra effort and whatnot, but again, that's just part of that initial investment to pay up front. That again, if you do grow both in team size and software size and overall load on the system, it's going to pay off in spades.
Right.
Hey, this is Rich. Please pardon this quick interruption. We recently passed an internal milestone of 50,000 listens, and I wanted to take a moment to thank you for the support. I was also hoping to encourage you to head over to iTunes and leave us a review and or a rating. Positive feedback and constructive criticism are both incredibly important to us. So give us an idea of how we're doing, and we'll promise to keep publishing new episodes every week. Okay, let's dive back in.
So two things that are coming to mind before we get into how to do this that I think might help people that are kind of having those fights, like, should, you know, one side is like, we need to break this down into more services. And the other side is, no, this is fine the way it is. Let's keep it all together in a larger app. I think a thing that I like to keep in mind is that as long as you're organized in how you write your code and how you modularize it inside of a larger monolith, or as long as you're organized in how you produce your microservice. So either side that wins. What I like to keep in mind is that you'll, when a problem happens down the road, guess what? You'll still know how to do. You'll still know how to code. And I've been thinking that way for 15 years. Like, I'll still know how to code when we run into the problem. And I've never seen a company with smart capability, you know, capable people that know how to work together that hasn't been able to get themselves out of a code issue. It's more when the people don't know how to work together that things really fall over. So just keeping in mind that you'll still know how to code, even if you don't make a perfect decision, is a great way to move forward. And then another kind of quote is from Martin Fowler that kind of says the same thing, but in a different way. When you run down the road into something that seems hard, you know, make the change easy and then make the easy change. So that might mean break it into microservices and then write your microservices. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's get into it. Let's
Indeed.
Get into a little bit more about what functionality we should put into a microservice. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so this gets more into the nuts and bolts. It's like, okay, so great, we've got the definition of a microservice and what it is. We talked about like the pros and cons, and we kind of decided like, yeah, this is something that we want to embrace and use. And so like, how do we go about like deciding what is a microservice, you know, versus what isn't? And I think one of the things that's helpful here is to kind of think of it as there's two broad categories of microservices. There's the vertical style and there's the horizontal, right? So I think the ones that are like pretty straightforward and much easier to grasp are the vertical microservices. And so these would be going after very specific application business logic type space. So they're doing something, they're performing a specific feature or task of the system that you're building, right? So it's like, it could be that like if you're doing a...
Yeah, well, I mean, I'll just use examples from when we've actually done this. So we had a lawyer app that let you connect with lawyers and, you know, schedule meetings with them and, you know, pay for those meetings. And a big part of the app was a monolith that did all of that stuff, but then they wanted the ability to add in a scheduling component so you could literally look at a calendar and schedule. And that scheduling component, that whole part of the application, was new and wasn't there before. And instead of just adding it to the existing monolith, you know, we made a microservice out of it, and it had its own everything. So that would be an example of this whole feature. A feature became a microservice.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So a great example of one of the vertical style microservices. Another one might be like if you're doing like a software development tool, and maybe you have something for doing like code reviews, like there could be a microservice just for handling the code review process of that as well. So it's a specific business.
Are you thinking about GitHub right now? Yeah. Like GitHub literally still is a Rails application, but I bet the code review stuff that they put on top of it is a separate service.
Well, they recently acquired Pulpanda, so at the very least, like that will be considered a microservice, or it's a separate service, if you will. But so these vertical microservices, again, they're kind of like they're the natural, you know, breakdown of applications and features. They align closely with those domains and subdomains of the business capabilities that we talked about earlier and kind of defining what a microservice is. And so it's just going to be up to you and your particular problem space and what you're building to identify like what those vertical units are, but it should be a pretty natural consequence.
Right. I wanted to add another thing to this. Like as you're starting an application and you're thinking about how to architect it and what microservices to build, a lot of times because microservices are so useful for scaling teams, a lot of times this will naturally fall out based on your initial team. So if you have three people working on something, you might just decide, you know, three people working on the back end of something, you might just decide, you know, Julie works on stuff related to users, Steve works on stuff related to, you know, feature A, and Sharon works on stuff related to feature B, and they'll work on them separately as microservices. And then from there, they may split again as the team grows, but initially you just have three people not creating any dependencies between each other. It's kind of a nice way to start a project.
Yeah, and I think there what's going on is like implicitly you're doing that design thinking up front, like, okay, what are the different domains? And like, that's what these people are working on, which ends up being kind of like a circumnavigation way of actually doing that process and saying, oh yeah, these are our microservices. You're just identified by like what people are working on. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of the same kind of thought processes happening in the background. So those are the vertical microservices. The other kind of broad category would be the horizontal ones, right? And so these are core foundational microservices. They expose functionality that would be common that other microservices kind of need to consume, right? And maybe a good way of thinking about this is a lot of the cloud providers, so whether it be Azure or AWS or Google, they have a bunch of just platform services that you can consume to go build your systems, right? So like you need to store files. So Amazon has S3. And so this is a service that exposes an API. You can do your puts, you can retrieve files from it. Similarly, there's identity would be another type of a kind of a core common platform service where you need to get the identity of a user, understand what their permissions are. And again, this is going to be something that maybe all your vertical microservices or many of your vertical microservices would need that kind of functionality, right? So instead of putting that functionality inside each one of those microservices, you can just carve that out and say, I'm going to package this up as its own microservice and let these other services then become clients, become callers to it and consume that functionality via an API. And so there's lots of candidates for these kinds of like core common horizontal microservices. And most of the time you'll probably be consuming them from other providers just because there's so many out there and there's so much
other providers like AWS.
Right. So like, I mean, we talked about this before. I mean, there's something like, 150 services just from the AWS console that you can get access to. And a lot of those would be candidates for this, right? So it's SQS for queues and things like Redis for caching and things like Cognito and IAM for permissions and identity, S3 for file storage, systems manager, parameter store for configuration. So lots of those kind of core foundational services from other providers. But sometimes you will discover that like it makes sense for you to have your own as well. Like you may have some very specific functionality that's just part of your business logic or business rules, but it's so core and foundational that it's something that everyone, all of your other microservices will need as well. So you may find yourself identifying that you do have some candidates for horizontal microservices. I think a common one here is some of the cross-cutting concerns. So whether it be things like metrics or logging or authorization, roles-based access control, those kinds of things end up being good candidates for doing this. And you can think of what ends up becoming is you kind of get a hub and spoke architecture. So those common core services end up becoming they're the hub, if you will. And then your verticals are the spokes that are making calls into it. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be one of those things that's going to be very specific to your situation. But I would really strongly recommend that if you find yourself duplicating logic and across multiple microservices, then definitely take a step back and think about like, hey, does this make sense to have it as its own?
Can I modify what you just said? Say it's not so much duplicating logic, but duplicating state, if you know what I mean? Like if you have to have the same state in your databases and keep that in sync across multiple microservices, then you may have a problem. You know what I mean? Like, because logic, you can just make if it's just code, you can just make a library and have your microservices all use the same library. But it's when every microservice has to know about the same thing. It's that every microservices database has to know about, you know, whether the user is logged in, and it's kind of keeping track of that state in some sort of persistent states. Mm-hmm. Like then that's like, oh, that's maybe not okay. Mm-hmm. Keep track of this all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely both scenarios. I mean, for sure, it becomes even more important when state is involved and you're trying to duplicate that. But even the logic is ends up becoming problematic, right? Because like, what if you need to you want to update that logic? If it's shared library that's inside eight other microservices, that means you have to redeploy eight different microservices.
Yeah, fair point.
Right? And you know, versioning problems potentially. Like what version of the library they're using. So if you take that core functionality and you encapsulize it as a service on its own, you basically free yourself up from some of those problems. But as you point out, like state becomes even more important to do this. Mm-hmm. Because trying to keep data in sync across multiple different sources, like that's one of the hardest problems out there, along with naming. Like naming things, like it's the two hardest problems in computer science are naming things and caching things.
Right. I guess what I want to say though, I agree, and I think we're on a real sensitive area here, because this is kind of where some of the religious debate comes around microservices, and people have problem. You know, many people listening might have been involved in a project where people tried to break down the core services and the sort of horizontal services too much, and then just ended up with a soup of services that all depended on each other. And then, oh my God, how do I even find where the problems are, because I'm six layers deep every time I need to do one thing? And so that, I think, is real. It definitely has happened to people, and people have definitely quit jobs over it. So maybe like a kind of, you know, here's me always sort of thinking about things from the beginning of an application. Maybe a good rule of thumb to start out with is that if you are going to do both horizontal microservices and vertical services, to try to keep your horizontal services to like one layer at first. And you may decide you need to break them into multiple layers, but just kind of like try not to do that unless you have a really good reason or previous experience that tells you it's a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think, again, in practicality, like the number of horizontal microservices you have is going to be very few compared to the number of verticals that you have. And if you find yourself having lots of horizontal, like there's probably something, again, wrong there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So like, I think, again, I mean, just looking back over my experience and with systems and the various projects that I've worked on, the times that we've built our own horizontal microservices, they're few and far between. They're very considered decisions, and they are more difficult to deal with, and they do lead in some of those problems that you're talking about, right? Like you have this, you can get into this problem where it's like service A is dependent on service B and B is dependent on C, but C is dependent upon A or something, right? And like you have this thing where it's like, wait a minute, we can't even start up anymore, right? Because there's something down the chain that we've got a loop in the system.
Right.
And so you can get into a situation where it gets ugly really, really quick. So, you know, from just a practical standpoint, I mean, you definitely want to be thinking long and hard about like how you're dividing this stuff up, what really is kind of like a core service that's going to be part of your hub in the architecture, and just realize that that's a considered decision. Because like I said, these are definitely more difficult to deal with because of these dependency issues.
Yeah.
And kind of, you know, just how do you, you know, what are your deployment dependencies and whatnot? So one of the things to kind of keep in mind is that normally, like when you're working on software and doing deployments, you're going to probably have multiple different environments, right? You might have a development environment where it's relatively unstable, and that's where you're kind of doing your system testing and integration, and things are breaking, and this is where your bleeding edge code is going. Then you might have, you know, another environment that's much more stable where, you know, you can have other people do like functional testing and end user testing and UI testing and whatnot. And then, you know, you'll have an environment for production, right? Like this is what your end users are using. So multiple different environments. And your vertical microservices definitely will go through that flow, right, of being in each one of those environments. With these horizontal microservices, though, it's not necessarily, like you probably don't want to have the same approach to it. So because this is part of your hub, because it is dependent on by these other microservices as a key dependency, it needs to be stable. And so if you have a development environment where you have an unstable vertical microservice, well, if the dependent core microservice that it depends upon to do its basic stuff, if that's also unstable, well, then it's just
a chaos.
It's just complete chaos. You can't do anything there. So, you know, I think, you know, the recommendation here would be with your core horizontal microservices, have a single stable environment for those. And that's what all your other environments will use. So dev, stage, prod will all refer to that one stable environment for your horizontal core microservice. And that way they don't have to worry about that being unstable. And then you have to kind of work around like, okay, what's my process going to be for testing new versions of the core microservice, right? Like, how do I integrate that in? But that's going to be separate from, like, you need to hide that from your consumers.
Right. I was thinking there may still be dev environment there, but it's just not something that dependencies would make use of.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think we can finish off there. And next week we're going to talk more about microservices. We're going to talk about just like how to move from a monolith to microservices. And we'll talk a little bit more about how to size your microservices. So yeah, I think we've kind of done it. We've like really gotten into more practical things to do with microservices and how to think about it from the point of view of a team. Do you have anything else you wanted to add before we close off here, Chris?
No, I think this is definitely a good point to finish up this week and then kind of leave this rolling into the next one where we can get more into the practical, the nitty gritty of like, okay, how do I make this real? Like, given just what goes on in the real world, like, how do I size these things? How do I, if I do have a monolith, how do I like start becoming more microservice oriented? Like, not everyone can do greenfield. So how do I do that? And it's not an easy path.
Right. And just as a teaser, I'm really excited about a future episode that we're going to do on microservices applied to UIs, like this idea of micro front ends, but we're not going to get there until we kind of lay all the groundwork. So I'm excited for that too.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Chris. Have a great rest of your week.
All right. Thanks, John. See ya.
Bye.
Well, dear listener, you made it to the end. We appreciate your time and invite you to continue the conversation with us online. This episode, along with show notes and other valuable resources, is available at mobicast.fm/68. If you have any questions or additional insights, we encourage you to leave us a comment there. Thank you, and we'll see you again next week.